Over the weekend, Australians took to the streets in support of the Black Lives Matter movement, with specific focus on the ongoing issue of Aboriginal deaths in custody. Health authorities expressed concern about the spread of COVID-19, and the New South Wales government tried unsuccessfully to have the Sydney March halted. Many of the participants were wearing masks, and there did seem to be some attempts at social distancing. The broader questions, though, are how effective really are masks and distancing, and whether we should be wearing masks more than we do in Australia. A review of the evidence has been published in The Lancet from reputable sources, and the accompanying editorial was written by Professor Ryan McIntyre, who heads the Biosecurity Research Program at the Kirby Institute at the University of New South Wales. I spoke to Ryan earlier.
There's been a WHO commissioned study on the effect of physical distancing, masks, and eye protection against SARS-CoV-2 or COVID-19. It basically put together all the evidence from every study on SARS-CoV-2, on SARS-1 and MERS coronavirus, and combined all that evidence using the grade criteria, which are considered the best criteria to apply for evidence. And it was done by a group that is accomplished at systematic reviews, and a Cochrane Collaborating Centre was involved. So it was, you know, done by a large international team.
And most of it's observational, rather, what happened in real life rather than necessarily a randomised trial.
That's right, yes. There are no randomised controlled trials of COVID-19 and any of those interventions. And some would argue it's unethical to even do a randomised controlled trial in the middle of a pandemic of a serious disease when there is already evidence that some of these things work for other viruses. They pulled together observational studies, so case control studies and other types of outbreak studies, and put them together.
And what did they conclude?
So firstly, the physical distancing really does work. And 1 meter protects you, reduces your risk by 82%. And every meter thereafter, and they had data up to 3 meters, increases the protection. It almost doubles the amount of protection. So keeping your distance, particularly as we open up society here in Australia, is really important. It can make a big difference. It also matters, I guess, in protests. So we've seen the protests over the weekend, and I was really pleased to see that a really high proportion of people were wearing masks in the big protests in Sydney, Melbourne, in Queensland. The police were giving out masks, which was really good. There wasn't so much physical distancing, unfortunately, but maybe the masks will counteract that. And that was the other bit of evidence, which was that face masks do protect equally in the community and healthcare settings when you adjust for the type of mask used. So the N95 respirators are much better, but the surgical mask and even a 12-layer cloth mask does give you good protection as well.
So let's just then come to how much more protection do you get from masks over and above social distancing? Do they actually estimate that?
Yes. What they said was that, you know, I mean, the bottom line is no intervention gives you 100% protection. You have to use them in combination to reduce the risk. And until the time that we can vaccinate people, you really have to use these interventions in combination. And, you know, when you're out and about, you can't always predict when you can social distance and when you can't. You know, there could be factors outside of your control where, you know, someone comes up right in your face and you weren't expecting it. So given that unpredictability when you're out and about, that also makes sense to use both the physical distancing and the masks.
Now, you and I talked a few weeks ago about the masks reducing the risk by about 60%. Does that bear out in the studies that this Lancet paper brought together?
Yes, so the masks reduce the risk by 67% in this study. The respirators reduce it by more than 95%, so they were much more protective, but obviously those are for our healthcare workers. For the community, you know, if you've got to get on a bus or a train and or in a crowded work situation, you know, a surgical mask will be protective.
And I'm just being clear here, protective in terms of spreading to another or protective in terms of you acquiring the infection?
Well, we don't know. We don't know. And the issue here is that a lot of the spread can happen before people have symptoms. So someone who's infected and infectious may not even know it. They're out and about, they're spreading virus. So there's a really nice study of seasonal coronaviruses that was published this year in Nature, where they showed that the coronaviruses were much more airborne than other respiratory viruses. And they can come out just with normal breathing. You don't even need to cough or sneeze. They just come out in your breath. But if you put a mask on, they don't come out at all. So there is a theory that, you know, because there's so much asymptomatic transmission, and one study estimated that 44% of transmission will occur in the 2 days before symptoms start. And we've seen another study that's estimated 15% of all infections never get symptoms. So in those people who are out and about, wearing a mask will prevent the virus from outward transmission to others. But there's also evidence that wearing a mask protects well people. So I think it's probably both factors are at play preventing transmission.
Now, WHO has just come out with recommendations for masks, presumably based on this review, and it's graded according to how much coronavirus is circulating in the community. Now, we've clearly not got a lot of coronavirus circulating in the community, but they do recommend, for example, on public transport for safety, you should wear masks, and that would compensate to some extent for social distancing. What's your view of what we, the public, should be doing at the moment with low levels of coronavirus, you know, very low levels in small states, in Victoria maybe a little bit more, but still not a lot, and New South Wales probably less than Victoria?
I think the recommendations are reasonable in that, you know, when there is a low level of disease in the community, the risk is low. However, we've just seen protests all over the country, even though it appeared that a lot of people were wearing masks. There could be a resurgence. There could also be a resurgence just because people are going back to work and going to the shops and out and about much more. So do we wait until we actually have a lot of disease to say, okay, now put on your mask, or do we act in a more precautionary way? You know, the truth is this virus is going to be around until we can vaccinate people. I think people can also make their personal choices based on their individual risk factors. If they have chronic diseases, if they're over 50, they may, you know, choose to wear a mask because that's an individual risk decision.
So you'd be, if you're officer commanding, you'd be saying we should be wearing masks, particularly indoors and on public transport?
Yes. I mean, I wear masks if I have to go out anywhere or if people that don't live in the household come into the household. And that was the other study, you know, which I was involved in, a study that came out in BMJ Global Health, which showed that wearing masks in the household reduced the risk of secondary transmission in the household. So that was just a cohort study where we followed families with a case of COVID-19 in China, in Beijing, China, looked at who developed secondary infections in the family and who didn't, and then looked at what factors were protective. And again, the physical distancing reduced your risk by almost 20 times. You know, if you kept 1 meter away from the members in your household, not sitting at the table together, not eating, not watching telly on the couch together, etc., the risk was 20 times lower. And wearing a face mask also protected, but you had to be wearing the mask before the first person who got infected developed symptoms, which again reiterates that there's a lot of transmission happening before symptoms start.
And the WHO also recommended the criterion for an effective homemade mask. I think it was triple layered with an absorbent material on the inside, such as closely woven cotton, and on the outside a polypropylene that was waterproof.
Yeah, look, there's not a lot of evidence on the actual design of the mask yet. There's a lot of people doing research on it, so we should have data in the near future on these different designs. But the basic principles are you need several layers, at least three layers. Anything less than that is not going to be effective. And that the Lancet study also showed that a single layered mask is nowhere near as effective as one with multiple layers. But also it showed that the other mask they looked at was the 12 layered mask. And I'm actually not sure how you could breathe through a mask with 12 layers. But anyway.
Breathability was an issue. So why do you think we are sloshing around a little bit with the mask recommendations? So
I think there's politics around masks. It's not about evidence. And this has been a long-standing issue for over a decade, actually probably dating back to SARS-1. There's been a lot of politics around masks, and it's not about the evidence. Often these interventions are presented as competing choices. Oh, if you wear a mask, you might forget to wash your hands. Well, you know, they're not competing choices. You need to use everything. And the people who are going to be non-compliant are going to non-comply with everything. You know, the people who are going to non-comply are not going to wear a mask. They're not going to wash their hands. They're not going to keep their distance. And the people who are, you know, maybe who've got illness or a bit older will use everything at their disposal. So these are not competing choices. They are interventions that need to be used together.
And when you say politics, what do you mean?
The debate and discussion around the use of masks is not driven by evidence. It's driven by other issues, ideology and beliefs and issues that have not got anything to do with the scientific evidence. That's all I can say.
And just finally, some people are saying that Japan has had a milder experience of the pandemic than other countries simply because mask wearing is much more universal. Do you believe that to be true? I mean, there's no it's hard to know what the truth is of the matter, but do you believe that to be true?
I don't think there's enough data to, you know, it's so prone to confounding and bias, those kind of, you know, you can't make those kind of observations generically about one intervention without better data. And I'm not even sure that Japan's had such a mild pandemic. They had quite a problem with case numbers a little while ago. So I think we need to get better data that are more individual level data from either good case control studies or cohort studies or, where possible, clinical trials.
And very finally, Raina McIntyre, we had you on right at the very beginning when this was just an inkling that something was going wrong in China. And I asked you for how worried you were. And I think that your first worry was 7 out of 10 for a pandemic. And then about a week or so later, you were up at about 9 out of 10 worry. So looking at Australia now for the rest of the year, the risk of a second wave given our current level of circulating virus, what's your level of worry for Australia now out of 10?
It's still extremely high, you know. I'd still give it a 9. And the reason is we can't exist in a silo. We live in a world that's interconnected. And as long as this infection is raging in other countries, we're never going to be out of trouble. It won't take much for it to take off again. And until we have a vaccine and we can vaccinate people, I really won't feel that relaxed. And I think people need to understand that so that they continue to be precautionary and don't become reckless, you know, with the physical distancing, the risk-taking, et cetera, to make sure that we maintain the hard-gained wins that we've achieved in Australia until the time that we can vaccinate people and then resume normal life.
Raina, thank you again.
It's a pleasure.
Hard taskmaster. Still 9 out of 10. Professor Raina McIntyre heads the Biosecurity Research Program at the Kirby Institute at the University of New South Wales.